God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Anyone in the room? Hey, Jeremy, welcome. Anybody on Zoom? I take that as a no. Okay. Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic, identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're discussing step one. Please welcome our panel this evening, Scott and Pavel. I will read the first paragraph starting on page 5, and then the panel will share for a few minutes with each reading, but I'll start with the step one. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. We're starting off on page 5. I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business. And so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way and I'd taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder. For such an appalling lack of perspective, it seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then. And I did. Wants to go first.
Well, thank you, sir. Scott, alcoholic.
Hey, Scott.
I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I wish I saw that a lot earlier than I did, but I didn't. I spent a long time trying to figure out whether it was the fourth. I knew three was probably okay. Although I may have gotten my first DUI after only three, but I didn't let that bother me because it was only one. But I thought about that a lot. Third, fourth, fifth, because I knew by the time I got past eight or so, things were definitely getting pretty stupid. But it never occurred to me I could not have one, like not one at all. Now, of course, I know all the slogans and the sayings. It's not the caboose that kills you, it's the engine, and all these things that used to just make me mad. But it's absolutely true that for a long time for me, it's been a fail-safe way of not getting drunk because I don't have the first drink. But I think it said somewhere in here also that, you know, renewing my resolve, I tried again. That's the key error, that I tried again. I mean, this is not step two, so I'll save all of that. But I didn't know at the time that I alone am not going to be able to do this. And also because when I tried again, I didn't do anything different. I just quit drinking and thought that some reason this time I'm going to have a couple and I'm really going to stop. And it never worked out that way. So pass.
Thank you, Scott. Pablo, alcoholic.
Pablo.
The first reading made me think of my wife or ex-wife, because I used to promise her, no more. I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. I remember one incident. I don't remember which number of detox I went to, but her parents were flying in from Japan to visit us. And I decided to clean up. I went to detox for 7 days. And on the way home, when I completed detox, I made a pit stop. I came home, I did what I did, and fell out on the couch. She came home maybe an hour later, and she found me passed out on the couch. And she was like, what the, like, you just, like, what's wrong with you? And I had no answer. You know, I had no answer. And I remember I used to watch, she knew that whenever I used to get really messed up at night, I watched Star Trek. So she's like, what's wrong with you? Are you an alien? And in my head, I was like, I think I am. So, and I had the resolve to, this time I'm done. I'm going to detox and meet her parents again. And I screwed it up again. So thank you.
Thanks for sharing, guys. Thanks for getting us started off. Just a reminder, just try to project at the microphone. Oh. Mm-hmm. All right, we're on page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer. Self-knowledge.
Scott, alcoholic again. I thought, I was pretty sure self-knowledge was the answer. And so I tried psychiatry before I tried AA. And it's not a bad idea. I don't regret doing it. I resolved, you know, some issues, I guess. Self-awareness, I knew. Yeah, that didn't work. That's a short story of it. You know, I've come to believe now that I drank because I was trying to fit a chemical solution for a spiritual problem. And I keep, you know, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I mean, that's the only way I've managed to still be sitting in front of you talking about this today, because I was entirely wrapped up in self, about what was wrong in my world. I had no idea, you know, it talks later about service and that kind of thing. I had no idea how effectively that could bring me back. But I got to that point of powerlessness. You know, my incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. I didn't think it was incredible, but it was absolutely true that when I walked out of jail after the third DUI I got, that I refused the ride home. Somebody had offered me to come pick me up and give me a ride. I refused that because if I walked, there was an ABC store on the way. And I knew that getting out of jail after the third DUI, you know, I wasn't gonna be able to hop in the car and drive as easily as I used to be. And I sure wasn't gonna give up drinking because my life sucked at that point. And so I stopped after walking out of jail in the third DUI to get more whiskey. Hand me another bottle, please. That was powerlessness and obsession. I was not willing to look for another way out at that point. So I definitely can identify with the with that part. I had the desire to quit, but it wasn't strong enough yet. So, thanks.
Thanks, Scott. Pavel, still alcoholic. This paragraph made me think of prior to my constant stints to detoxes, because I used to go to detoxes because when someone mentioned rehab treatment, I was like, you're really bad if you need to go treatment. Like, I'm not that bad. I just have small problem, maybe. Nah, it's not me, it's something else. So I remember I used to leave, when I was younger, I was on Wall Street. And so I used to tell myself, I need to figure this out. I could do this. So I used to leave Wall Street, really messed up on one substance and go to drink to calm down from that. And then hit my favorite Barnes and Nobles. It was on Union Square. It was right by my old college. I went to NYU, to Stern, and hit the self-help section because I'm gonna figure out what's wrong with me. Granted, I was drunk and high at the same time, but I'm gonna figure it out. Well, it didn't work out that well. But I wanted to figure out what's wrong with me. Of course, later on found out there's a better solution, but until then, it's going to be my way. And my way got me drunk again. So thank you.
Thank you, guys. We're now on page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There's a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove.
Scott, alcoholic again. Lost the power of choice in drink. I mean, I keep saying I fought that a lot. I mean, I fought pretty much everything about step one. And I thought that meant that every time I drank, I was going to get falling down drunk and wind up in jail. And that didn't happen. Now, the fact that it happened enough, that didn't deter me. But I thought, well, it doesn't happen every time. Sometimes it does not. But today I read that differently, that, you know, I don't have the power of choice in, or before I had any kind of spiritual experience at all. And when I was still trying to do this all on my own, I may occasionally have stopped. Sometimes I did, but I never really had the choice to not drink again because inevitably I did. And so that's what that says to me again. Maybe I'll stop after two. Maybe I'll stop after four, but it's a complete crapshoot. It could be 10. I have no idea. And that's true today if I chose to start drinking. So, but at that point in step one, I had no choice but to drink again. The question was just how long was it going to be? And I thought, since, hey, I could go a month or more without it, then we're still doing all right. So I set the bar pretty low. Thanks.
Pavo, still alcoholic. This paragraph made me think of, which I realize I am so messed up. It was 2 years, it was about, it was like, 2-3 days after Christmas in Brooklyn, there was snow everywhere. And I remember I mentioned to my mom, I'm going to go for a walk. And she's like, a walk? You don't usually walk. Where are you going? She's like, I just, because we were at my mom's boyfriend's house for Christmas. And of course, I went to the subway, took the subway somewhere in Brooklyn to get what I really wanted. And walking out of the train station in Williamsburg in Brooklyn, I slipped and I fell and I broke my hand. As soon as I fell, I knew I broke my hand. Well, what did I do? I got up, went to where I wanted to go, got what I needed, and then I went to the hospital. I mean, the insanity of this, like I knew my hands busted. But there was something more important. Like normal people don't do that. I mean, I do that, or I used to do that. That's insanity for me. And today I don't do that. I'm very blessed to be able not to do that today, you know? And even walking to the place to get what I wanted, I was telling myself, dude, what's wrong with you? Like, go to hospital. So anyway, that's it for now.
Thank you, guys. Page 30 for our next reading is, most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is a great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better.
Scott, I'm still an alcoholic. There's all kinds of stuff here. The first sentence hits me. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. The Commonwealth of Virginia was the first entity that suggested that maybe I was an alcoholic, but I had a number of issues with their decision. I am 19 years old. I mean, sure, it's a DUI, but I'm in college. I mean, everybody drinks in college. Strangely enough, not everybody does, apparently. But they were convinced that because I had driven drunk once at the age of 19, I was an alcoholic. And I said, well, screw you. You're clearly wrong because I can't even legally buy beer. I can't be an alcoholic until I'm at least old enough to buy beer. And I wasn't interested in thinking that I was mentally or bodily different than my fellows. But when it talks about countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people, somewhere between the second and third DUI before I gotten out of college, when I realized there might be an issue and I thought it was time to start controlling it, I went with a couple guys up to Washington, D.C. on a trip for school. We were going to this video editing place to do a project for a couple days. And so they go to lunch one afternoon at this bar, and I said, I'm having a couple beers because they're having a couple beers. And I had two beers. Thank you very much. I am in control of this. I have got it. Two DUIs be damned. I'm rolling now. But what I would not have admitted to you at that time is I couldn't have told you when we walked out of there even what I ate for lunch. I couldn't have told you anything about the conversation we had. I remember to this day I ordered a Rolling Rock. I can tell you that. Because that's my focus. And so that helped me to see, unfortunately, not at the time, but years later, it helped me to see that's what this powerlessness thing is to me. I can occasionally stop. But the minute I have that first drink, then my thought is on nothing but alcohol. I'm not thinking about the menu. I'm not thinking about what we're talking about or what I'm eating. It's all about the alcohol. And I'm really focused on whether you have drank as much of your drink as I've had of mine. Because when I realize I drank 2/3 and you're only at a third, then damn. Now I got to think of something to talk about because I got to stop for a minute and do something other than drink. And because I'm in control of this, right? I got it. And I walked out of there with this real sense of accomplishment that I only had two beers. It didn't occur to me. That's really a pretty miserable way to live. Later that night, we're hanging out at this guy's house and they got a 12 pack in the corner. They're not drinking it. What the hell? We got this to drink. And they're like watching TV or playing. I don't even remember. Again, I'm not thinking about anything except that unopened beer over there because I'm in control. I got to prove to you again that after two or three, I'm going to stop. Like, man, I wish I could say that was the bottom point, but that was just the example that came to mind when I think that I tried again and again. And the conclusion I've come to today is from the doctor's opinion, I think it is, where it says we are men and women who can never safely drink. I can't drink today. Not at all. Because I could say, man, I had such a convincing performance at the Simple Actions meeting. I'm going to have a couple on the way home. And maybe I will stop, but I can't guarantee that I'm going to. Two turns into nine, and I'm the last one to know. And I've been able to put too much together in life and sobriety to give that away today. Thanks.
Thanks, Scott. I'm Pavel, still alcoholic. You know, towards the end, I knew there's something wrong with me. I've proven to myself many times. But I didn't want to admit it, even though I knew it to be true. Because if I say I'm an alcoholic, I'm just like my dad, him and I never had a good relationship. I also did substances. If I'm an addict, I'm just like my brother, which we had a love-hate relationship. And both of them paid the ultimate price, you know? And the last conversation I had with my brother, we got in a fight because he called me an addict. I was like, dude, you're the addict. I work on Wall Street, I'm married to a model. I'm nothing like you. Well, he was correct, you know? And I knew my life is unraveling because my wife then her and I stopped going vacations together. She kept going out herself, and I kept going to detoxes. And I was like, I worked my ass off. This is not true. And she goes on vacation. And even still in detox, I would like try to figure out what is wrong with me. And then when they had like, you know, people bringing meetings in, like, and I would sit in the back, judge them. It's like, what a loser, bringing, don't you have a life? Do something fun, bringing me. I was so messed up, so messed up. Today I get to wake up and not drink. It's beautiful. You know, I remember my last research and development. I was working, I was sober 3 months. I was doing, just started doing my fourth step, and I had the great idea of rescuing my ex-girlfriend who's out there researching. And my sponsor then said, dude, don't. And I'm like, I know what I'm doing. And that turned to 16 months and 8 months in jail. That was the best lesson I ever had and proved to me I'm alcoholic. And I remember when I woke up in jail, I don't remember how I got arrested. I remember none of it. I woke up and I prayed for the first time. I prayed not to get me out because I was out on bail and I got rearrested. So I knew I'm not going home. And but I prayed for the first time in my life sincerely. And I just asked him for help. Help me stop drinking. And I've been sober since. God willing, September will be 14 years. So if a bozo like me could do it, anyone could. So thank you.
Thank you, guys. Next reading's on page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I'd made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. I'd commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesized that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more, for what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow.
Scott, alcoholic. Almost kind of a chuckle a bit when I read about, you know, he says, like, you commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. As I hear people share in meetings today, and it connects with me in a way it never did, that, you know, I never went out in the times that I wasn't drinking and said, I'm just going to have Dr. Pepper tonight. I never bought a 12-pack of that. I never chugged at two of them. And I never, you know, finished the whole 12-pack in one night, ever. It just didn't occur to me. That's not what you do with Dr. Pepper. For some reason, I had that idea that that's very definitely what you do with alcohol. There is really no need to have beer left over at the end of the night. And so that strange mental blank spot, or the mind of the alcoholic, I mean, all kinds of places I could go with that. But one of the reasons that I convinced myself that I didn't belong in these fine meetings is that I didn't, you know, I wasn't hopelessly defeated, but I was pissed. I mean, I was angry at absolutely everything. So it wasn't necessarily that I would have told you, it wasn't that I wanted to quit and couldn't stop. I didn't care if I ever stopped. I'm going to drink because this world has treated me so wrong. And I am so angry at the people in it and the institutions for various reasons, which I learned later in the fourth step, many of which had to do with me. But I wasn't thinking about that at this point. I drank because my family drank. My dad's family was alcoholic. You know, he died from depression and suicide and alcoholism. And wouldn't you drink as well? Turns out that happens to a lot of people who don't turn out to be alcoholics. So I didn't have a real solid excuse, but I was willing to go with that. And it eventually, you know, it says it was a crushing blow. It took me a long time to get there, or it seemed like a long time to me. I knew after, you know, I wasn't convinced as early as the state was that I was an alcoholic. But by the second DUI, 2 years later, I was reasonably certain alcohol at least played a role in the negative things that were happening in my life. And by the third one, you know, a year and a half after that, then I was pretty convinced I was an alcoholic. But I thought, AA? No, no, you're kidding me. I'm 24, 25 years old. AA is 60-year-old men who smoke too much and drink a lot of coffee and go to meetings every night. And I want no part of that. What I didn't realize at the time was, well, I'd really not invested in any other facet of life either. I wasn't giving up a whole lot by going to a meeting because the only other thing I did was sit at home and drink. You know, I graduated from college at that point, so it was no more wild parties. It was going to work and going home and getting drunk, and sometimes getting drunk and going to work and coming home and getting drunk. And there was nothing really to give up. So yeah, the crushing blow for me actually took a little longer. You know, I was a couple of years into sobriety before I even came to AA. Because I was fighting the God idea and a bunch of stuff in step two and three that you talk about. I wanted no part of that. I look back in retrospect and I see some sort of God of understanding, my understanding working in my life, because the psychiatrist that I was going to, instead of going to AA or instead of, you know, seeking God, he said, because I bemoaned to him how disconnected I was and how nobody treated me the way they should. And I just felt alone all the time and yada, yada, yada. And he made what may have been a passing comment. He said, you know, some people meet in church. Some people, that's a social thing for them. I don't know if he had any kind of religious belief at all, but I thought, okay, he's the doctor. Maybe he knows something. So I wound up belonging to a church. I was a part of the Appalachian Trail Club for a number of years early on before I actually took part in AA. But what I didn't see in any of that point was I was kind of doing the steps. These steps that I fought against, I was, in a way, seeking out a higher power. I was accepting that I was, you know, that my life was unmanageable. And I guess finally, you know, I even learned a little bit about step four, trying to run away from AA, is these friends of mine that I found through the trail club. You know, I drank my license away by that point. And I knew at some point they're going to ask why I don't drive anywhere, why I don't have a car. This thought is in my head for like a year and a half. I mean, maybe 2 years. It's always in my head. Did I approach the situation? No. No, I just waited for the inevitable time to come. They're going to ask. I know it. They're going to ask. Sure enough, they did. Hey, how come you don't drive? And, you know, and I just tried the truth. I say, I got a couple of DUIs when I was in college, and I don't have a license. And they said, ah, shame on you. And went on to, I don't remember what the next point of the conversation was, but it moved quick. That was it. So even before I got to AA, I had some little inkling that, hey, maybe even this fourth step is not quite as traumatizing as I was afraid of. So I'm not sure where I'm headed next, and perhaps I'll stop. Thanks.
Scott, Pavel alcoholic. I don't know if I was devastated. It says it was a crushing blow. I mean, I knew I was alcoholic and addict. I just didn't want to admit to myself, because then I'm going to, working on Wall Street for years, you can't show you're weak. So coming to this program eventually, it was such a, the saying, give up one thing, gain everything. Mm. I was like, man, I can't do that. I can't show I'm weak. But when I did, when I finally admitted it, it was such a revelation. I know what's wrong with me, which I knew for years, but... You know, I've mentioned before, like, I went to this detox in New York and Manhattan, the one that I left, and then, you know, my wife caught me messed up right before parents came. I went there 9 times, just that one. There were very other detoxes I went to Manhattan, but that one, the 9th time, the counselor was like, okay, go to detox, go upstairs to rehab. I'm like, no, rehab, you have problems. And he's like, Pavel, you've been here 9 times. I think you have a problem. You're not special. And it still didn't dawn on me. I remember that when I got arrested in 2008 and I spent 8 months in jail. I've been in jail before, but never that long. So I had a lot of time to think. And actually, I found a big book 2 weeks into my stay, my vacation, like my mom called it. I had a big book for like 9 years. Mm. 9 years. And I remember the day before my sentencing, I got on my knees and I prayed, again, sincerely, thy will be done, not mine. And I wrote down the third step prayer, serenity prayer, and I took that with me to court. And I had the deal of a century. I was looking at 6 years in prison, and I got a year, which is 8 months, 8.5 months. And I went to jail a spoiled brat. I walked out a humbled man. You know, I went to enough rehab, spent enough money. But jail, they charged me $3 per day, worked better for me. I don't recommend that to anybody, but it worked for me. And I've been sober since. You know, it was awesome to finally admit to myself, I'm just like my dad. I'm just like my brother, you know? So thank you.
Thank you. Page 43. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare cases. Neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power.
Scott, alcoholic, higher power. Interesting. That was, I'm glad they used those words because that was more palatable to me than using the God word. I was not the least bit interested in any of that. And I would love to have a story that, you know, I walked out of jail and I had this shining light experience. I'm still open to envy and jealousy even today. It's, man, how come that didn't happen to me? Which is crazy. How can I sit here after 20 some years of sobriety and I can still be jealous that something didn't happen for me that exact same way? For me, it took a lot longer. I just realized after a while, because I said, I'm quitting drinking. Thank you very much. I've hit the bottom. I'm not drinking anymore. It's not fun. It's just a means of keeping life from being as miserable as it would be if I didn't drink. And I wanted no part of AA, no part of anything else. And I thought, I had the crazy idea in my head. What if I do try this AA thing? What if AA just blows up? Or what if it doesn't work? Then I it's going to be all me. And I stayed that way for a while because I have a lot of ego and a lot of pride to wear down before the truth finally starts to clear up to me. And it was a few years at least after I quit drinking when I realized, you know, of all the times that I drove drunk, why did nothing happen? And aside from getting caught and going to jail, I mean, that sucked. But there are people who ran into, you know, caused property damage. There are people who killed people drunk. I never did. And I never was quite brazen enough to take full credit for that. But I did think that maybe I was just a little better than average drunk driver because I only got caught three times. And of all the times I ever drove drunk, I mean, I should have been caught hundreds, if not thousands. But slowly over time, it occurred to me that, well, whether I can take credit for it or whether God did it or didn't, or whether he intervened in some way, the very least I can do is be grateful that I have nothing hanging over my head today. You know, I don't have the knowledge that I caused someone serious personal injury or that I killed someone as a result of drunkenness. And just for that alone, I could be really, really grateful. And then if I take that a step farther and say, whoa, what if there was some power greater than me that kept worse things from happening in my life, then maybe, again, the very least that I could do is take a little time and give some of that back. Because I thought the idea of coming to meetings for the rest of my life, who wants to do that? Sure, I had some bad years in the 90s and my 20s when drinking was ugly, but I'm just going to soar right up and out of this, and I don't need to waste the rest of my life coming to meetings and talking about the good old days. It didn't occur to me until we learned later in the book that I'm uniquely qualified to talk with other people who have been in that situation and to help them out. I had the gift, and I do consider it a gift today, of sitting at Stella's a couple of days ago talking with the sponsee, reading this part that we read a little bit earlier. I think that the guy in Washington, I think there's a part of that story where he talks about he had the idea that a highball would be nice, or, you know, something to that effect. Mm-hmm. And getting to share that with someone else and say, isn't it? It comes in quick, doesn't it? Getting to share that, taking other people through the steps today is part of the identity that I have today. And that used to be embarrassing. you know, to admit to anyone else that I was a part of AA or that it was actually meaningful. There are people in my life who know that I'm alcoholic. You know, I don't tattoo it on my forehead, but there are people who do, and they come up to me and ask if I can talk to people. It's like, wow, that gives me that sense of usefulness and purpose that I never had before, when I spent most of my college days just drunk because people were not treating me well enough. So that's kind of where I go when I think about this idea of his defense must come from a higher power. You know, today I have the luxury of a long time sober. And today it's different. The thought crosses my mind periodically. The temptation hasn't in a long time. It's been maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I was mildly tempted to drink, and it was exactly because the world was not treating me the way I thought I needed to be treated. I had lost sight momentarily that all the blessings in my life were still there. It just wasn't arranged the way I wanted it to be arranged. And today, thankfully, I've got a longer view of that, thanks only to the daily maintenance of the spiritual condition, to being places here tonight, because I'd rather just go home after work, throw some food, you know, eat some food, throw a movie on, do something about me, because that's what the world is still mostly about. And but when I come here and I maintain that spiritual condition, then that's what I think of when it says his defense must come from a higher power. Because things today have turned out unlike I ever could have predicted. You know, I quit drinking long enough and the Commonwealth gave me my license back. And I wound up, through a step three story, turning my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him, I wound up in a totally different career. Tomorrow morning for work, I get to go in and teach 15 four-year-olds in the public school system, something I could not do if I was drunk. That would go away so fast, because when I start drinking, you know, I don't show up to work drunk the first day, but after the first week, or definitely after the first month, I'm going to get to the point where I just don't want to stop drinking anymore just because it's morning and I have to go to work. So I'm going to show up to work drunk, and that's not going to go well. I'm going to be the teacher on the news. Oh, he's the pre-K teacher who got fired for being drunk at work. I'm not interested in doing that today. Thanks to the other steps past this first one, then I have ways of getting through challenging days. I have ways of putting them in perspective that I did not have when I drank. So it's a gift to be here tonight, to be invited and to be on the panel. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Scott.
Pavel, alcoholic. I remember reading this with my second sponsor. I had few last few years, and the second sponsor was my favorite for a while. And I remember he used to tell me, you know, I'm just like you, another bozo on this bus. We're just sober. And he's like, at the end of the day, I'm here to take you through the steps and hopefully bring you closer to a higher power, to God. And but he's like, at the end of the day, it's not me. I'm human like you. I'll make mistakes. I'm not perfect. So at the end of the day, when you have that thought and desire to drink or do something else, you have to pick up the phone. You have to. I'm not going to be next to you. You know, and that hit me, because he's, you know, he was right. How strong is my sobriety? It's not when I'm on mountaintop and everything's, you know, wonderful. It's when shit is bad. Well, I mean, it goes both ways. Even, you know, people get high when it's great too, you know, and drink. I remember when he said that to me, he's like, you're this far away from a drink. And it's your relationship with your God or your higher power will determine whether you will drink or not. It's like, it's not me, you know? So I'm like, he's like, my job is to take you to these steps and bring you closer to God. I remember a friend of Florida told me a long time ago, when I got sober this time and stayed sober, been sober, she's like, the 12 steps are like a ladder to your God. By the 12th step, you will have a God or whatever you call to be your higher power, you know? Because for years, a few years, you know, I was born in Poland, so of course church and everything, but I walked away from God when he took my brother, which I blame God for. And it wasn't God. God actually helped him. And it took his misery away, you know? And of course, I realized that later when I got sober. that it wasn't God who took my brother. My brother chose, he did what he did, you know. Today I have a God. Today I'm sober, I have a sponsor, I have sponsees. And is my life perfect? No, but it's amazing. Every day I wake up and I don't drink. You know, I know this is AA meeting, but back in the day, I used to say, every day I wake up and I don't cook breakfast in my spoon, it's a beautiful day. Mm. Some will understand, some will not. But for me, today, I use my spoons for coffee and soups. That's it. You know, and to me, I just got goosebumps. To me, that's important because I am not the person from almost 14 years ago or 10 years ago, or 5 years ago. I constantly change and evolve with this program. It's a beautiful program, yet I fought it for years not to be in it because I would be just like those people, which I was. So if you knew and struggling, this is a beautiful life. It's a beautiful life. And I wouldn't, someone asked me a couple months ago, what would happen if you want to do, use or drink? I was like, I'd rather jump in front of a train, literally, because that's what's going to happen. The way I was running at the end, I'm going to die. I will die. And I don't want to do that to my mom. She already buried her firstborn. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, guys. We got a few minutes. I want to ask if either of you guys want to share a little bit on what really made the diff, like what made the turn to committing to AA and doing this thing around step one.
I remember which year it was exactly. I had a number of years of sobriety, not interested in AA, but doing the steps all the same, getting in contact with the God of my understanding, which makes me, the God of my understanding definitely has a sense of humor, but it was realizing that even though I was doing maybe a little step work indirectly, that I still had more issues, namely selfishness. I had, through the church, met someone, had a wonderful relationship going for all of like 3 months, until it just crashed and burned. And I got this sense from talking with other people that I was taking this much more seriously than anyone else was. Like, dude, have you ever been in a relationship? And get over it. And that was kind of an eye opener to me that maybe there were still some selfishness issues for me to work on. And I don't remember the exact thought that brought AA back to mind. Part of it also was that I was in a group. The church had a group that was kind of like a AA meeting, and we met every week and talked about life and issues and whatever. And it was a men's group. It was great until all of them except me got married and moved on. So now I need to start doing something. I need to fill my life in some other way. And I'm still definitely an alcoholic. If I drink today, I'm going to wind up in as much trouble as I ever was before. So I still qualify. But I didn't want to, I had fears, runaway fears. That's another indicator, maybe, because I thought I'm going to go to a meeting and it's going to be these three old guys I was always afraid of, who've known each other for 20 years, and I'm going to be the oddball, the sore thumb. So I'm no dummy. I looked up the meeting list, the old fashioned paper meeting list back in 2000, whenever this was, and I found the meeting that had babysitting, because that's got to be big. I am not going to be pigeonholed. I'm not going to be caught by some guy who wants to talk at a meeting so big that it has babysitting service. So I went to the Talbot Park meeting, the Bayview meeting on Saturday night. Turned out to be an eating meeting speaker. I go, bonus. I can just eat some food, and this is wonderful. I saw a guy there who was the husband of one of my coworkers, and I'd seen him a time or two, didn't know he was in the program. But I thought, okay, a familiar face. I go up and talk to him. And he said, hey, if you happen to be looking for a home group, which I wouldn't have admitted to anyone I was, if you're happening to looking for a home group, come to my home group. It's a men's big book study on Tuesday nights. We meet at downtown. Mm-hmm. So I got connected there again. God was at work in my life when I was trying to go in the opposite direction. He said, go to this meeting here, bud, and hooked me up with a home group. And that was my last intention. So that's how I found my home group, by running away from it. So which was a lead into step two and three. You know, I believe God works in my life even when I try to fight him, and I'm very grateful for that. Thanks, Scott.
For me, it was I had few stints in sobriety or in recovery, like maybe 8 months, 9 months, 3 months, 3 months in the jail for a while. And then in jail, I, like I said, I found the big book and I've read the first number of pages. I read Bill's story a couple of times, but only sitting in jail when I read it and I read it. And I was like, wow, he was on Wall Street like me. And I read that like, I'm Polish, but that's like crazy. Like read it like 10 times and it never dawned on me he was on Wall Street. So sitting, that was for me exactly what needed to happen. You know, for me to read the first 164 pages in jail. I mean, it's a shit show in jail, trust me. And then it was perfect for me because I read it, I understood it. And when I got out, prior to the jail time, I was in a halfway house in Florida and I got kicked out because of course I got high in it. And then I was there maybe 3 days. And then I wanted to fight the owner to give me the money back that my mom paid because I want to get, you know, do what I need to do. He didn't, and I just couldn't stand him. So then fast forward, when I'm in jail for 8 months, I wrote to a couple of different halfway houses so I could go in because I lost everything. Got arrested, had a brand new car, a place, a girlfriend. 8 months later, I have nothing. I'm walking out of jail with a plastic bag. And I wrote to a number of people and only one wrote back to my mom and called her, the guy that kicked me out. And he picked me up from jail, took me to a halfway house. And I was so happy to be in a place to have a key. And I have a shower, my own shower, not like 20 people, like a shower. And for the first time in my life, I was grateful. Grateful for having a place, which I always such a spoiled prick, you know, excuse my French. Like I felt everything's owed to me. And when he picked me up, he had, last time I saw him, he had 16 years. When he picked me up, he wasn't sober anymore. But he wanted me to have a safe place. His halfway house was a sober house. Mm. To me, that was God. No one ever wrote back to my mom or to call her. But him, he's no longer with us anymore, unfortunately. And I realized like God did for me what I couldn't do myself. Taught me to be grateful, taught me to be a better person, taught me to do things for people and not to put on Facebook that I did something nice. Like just do things for others without wanting anything back. It was always about me, and what could I get from you? I haven't been like that for the last almost 14 years. So there's some kind of correlation in being a decent person and being sober. I end with this. People always like, oh, what's God's will? What's God's will? Me, I believe, I don't know what's God's will, but I believe is don't be a prick. Just simple. Be a decent person. I've been, and I'm still sober. So I know that's God. That's not me. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, gentlemen. That was fantastic. I'm looking forward to everybody staying around and thanking you guys afterwards. That was just wonderful. Now for the seventh tradition. They'll be posting some links on the website, and we'll pass the baskets. We also have options for PayPal and Venmo. Seven tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seven tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety, Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees, encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? And that includes for the Zoom folks.
I'm an alcoholic named David.
Hey, David. David,
grateful to be here. Grateful to be sober tonight. Thank you guys so much for sharing. June 11th, that's a Saturday. There's an event called Saturday of Service. It sounds terrible. It sounds like we're going to have to work, but we're not. It's just a get-together, basically District 14 Norfolk, the two Virginia Beach districts and Western Tidewater. We get together, lunch will be served, and people who are involved in corrections and treatment, CPC, they'll talk a little bit about that, maybe 4 or 5 minutes each, but our Virginia delegate, there's only one of them, who went to the General Service Conference a couple of weekends ago. She's going to drive down here from Winchester and give us a personal report on what happened at the General Service Conference. So it's kind of a cool little function. And so help us announce it. No charge for it. It's at Bayside Presbyterian Church, Saturday, June 11th, 11 a.m. start time. All the details are on tidewaterintergroup.org. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to go to dinner tonight at Plaza del Sol. You going to talk about that?
Okay. Thank you for covering that, though. Thank you, David. Any other announcements? Is there any announcements on Zoom?
We can't hear.
Okay. All right.
We don't have speakers for Zoom.
Oh, no, we were plugged in. Okay, that was my bad. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after this meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. All right. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting, and I'll be at this table. You can come ask me as well. Feel free to talk to any of us. If you're shy, you can go on to info@simpleactions.net and send an email to us. Closing, as David mentioned, we're going to go as a group to Plaza del Sol, something we used to always do for after the meeting. So please join us for a meal if you like, and good conversation about the topics discussed tonight.
Where is it?
Oh, that's a great question. It's over right off of 21st.
22nd and Colonial.
22nd and Colonial.
Wasn't sure if it was right on 22nd. Thanks for covering that.
Of course.
Perfect.
Backing up to the train tracks.
Yeah,
you go over the train tracks.
You went too far. And if that's confusing, just hang around after. We can help you get better directions. Thanks for all who participated. After the Lord's Prayer, you'll have an opportunity to thank our speakers. I'm going to ask Jason if he doesn't mind coming up and reading the last three paragraphs on page 164.
Jason Alcoholic.
Jason.
A vision for you, big book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come when your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. And so we can be uniform with the people on Zoom, we'll stay in our seats while we say the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Woohoo!
Thanks, God. Thanks, Paul.
Hey, Aaliyah.
Thanks, y'all.
So much.
Thank you.
It's always a pleasure to hear you guys talk.
Thanks to everybody here at Zoom World.
Thank you.
Thank you.